It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Another state prison saw its first inmate death due to coronavirus earlier this month. Currently, there have been more than 18,000 inmates who've tested positive for the virus. And according to the State Department of Corrections, roughly 65 have died. We're going to talk about the State Corrections Department's handling of COVID-19 behind bars. John Hargraves is the Director of Volunteers with the Pennsylvania Prison Society. John, welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you, Kevin.
John, I spoke with Corrections Secretary John Wetzel in March. As the shutdown began in our state, the warnings were out about congregating in groups. He said of Pennsylvania's nearly 47,000 inmates, about 12,000 have underlying conditions that make them more vulnerable to the virus, and that each prison had its own quarantine plan. Pennsylvania Prison Society advocates for prisoners. You have access to facilities and inmates that most, including media, do not. So can you give us a sense, how bad is COVID in our state prison system right now?
Well, to the credit of the Department of Corrections in Pennsylvania, they're doing a better job than most states. Nationally, we see that 1 in 5 inmates has tested positive for COVID. In Pennsylvania, it's 1 in 7. However, 1 in 7 is 3 times the rate of the citizens that are wandering around not in prisons. So it's still very dangerous in prison for an inmate vis-a-vis COVID.
Mm-hmm. Well, a report from the Council on Criminal Justice did find that Pennsylvania has relatively low case numbers in comparison to other states that you were alluding to. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, the primary reason is Pennsylvania jumped on masks early. They were one of the first states to make masks mandatory for staff and inmates, and that makes a huge difference. And they've tested continually, and when they do test, they make sure they have an effective quarantine program. As you understand, it's very difficult to socially distance in prison, mm-hmm. but they do what they can, and particularly in the newer state prisons, they're more capable of socially distancing.
Mm-hmm. State prisons don't require staff to take COVID-19 tests, but they have limited visitation. Staff, I understand, are the only ones in and out of facilities, aside, of course, from inmates that might get transferred for medical care. What's your understanding of why not testing staff?
Well, I believe the unions had told them that that would violate the union contract.
John, without visitation, it leaves some families to rely on video visitation or phone calls. Wetzel told The Confluence that friends and family can access their loved ones via Zoom, and inmates are permitted 5 free phone calls per week. Has this helped maintain contact with families or not?
Video visitation that's available to families and inmates helps them with their mental health stability. However, the drawback to this is because COVID is increasing in prisons across Pennsylvania, more inmates are put in quarantine, and they lose access to email and video visits because they're not circulating in the prison, but rather staying in their cells. And when that happens, families justifiably are worried, why haven't I heard from my loved one? What's going on with he or she?
Mm-hmm. What do you think facilities should be doing to serve mental health, particularly in the midst of the holiday season, when some might be especially feeling alone, and if they don't have that contact, that connection with loved ones?
Well, unfortunately, this increases the stress not only outside prison, but particularly so inside prisons. Keeping in mind when the inmate is in lockdown or in quarantine, they're in their cell about 23 hours a day with someone they may not know very well. Almost all people are double-celled now. So they're locked in, and they're having their meal in their cell. They're not getting out to exercise. If they're out an hour a day, they might want to take a shower. They may want to do a virtual visit or make a phone call. So this is very stressful for the inmates, keeping in mind that prisons are already overcrowded. They're poorly ventilated. Their inmates are frequently in dorms, so there's no social distancing in dorms. And when they are in cells, that's an open bar door. Unlike nursing homes, which have some protection because they're a solid door, that's not the case with prisons because the bars do not impede the air circulation at all.
Governor Wolf made an effort to reduce prison populations by granting temporary reprieve to nonviolent state inmates with underlying conditions. The hope was to reduce the overall population by about 1,000 inmates, but so far, I believe only 100 have been released. Why is that the case?
Part of that stipulation was that the local district attorneys and county courts had to also approve that particular inmate returning to the community. And they declined to exercise that option, so these people were not given the possibility of leaving the prison. Keep in mind, the Department of Corrections would love to get rid of inmates. They realize that the fewer people they have, the more they can socially distance. But they don't have any control about who's in their facilities. So it was up to the governor and the legislature to act on the mandates. Mm-hmm.
The vaccine is being distributed. According to the Department of Health's interim plan, prisoners are part of Phase 1B. They would come after long-term care facilities and some energy sector employees. Where do you think inmates should fall on that list?
Right where they are. That's a great plan by the Department of Health. We commend them for that because the prisoners are so vulnerable in these settings.
So, John, you're saying the Department of Health got it right in this case?
Yes, we think so. Inmates are going to be in this 1B phase, which is behind, as you mentioned, the nursing homes and the essential care workers and health care workers. We think that's exactly right.
So are you letting prisoners know that, and their families, that they are in line to receive the vaccine?
Yes, that's our plan.
John Hargraves is the volunteer director for the Pennsylvania Prison Society. John, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Confluence reached out to the Pennsylvania State Corrections Officers Association for comment, but we did not hear back by our deadline. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. With COVID cases still surging across Pennsylvania and locally, and some still not heeding advisories from health and government officials, business leaders are hoping that a new effort to protect our region will resonate, especially during the holidays. Stephanie Pashman is the CEO of the Allegheny Conference on Community Development. Welcome back to The Confluence, Stephanie.
It's nice to be here, Kevin.
Stephanie, the campaign is called Proud to Protect Pittsburgh. Whose attention are you trying to catch? Businesses? Workers?
All of them. This is really about talking to our neighbors, talking to each other and the broader Pittsburgh region, about being a good neighbor, being proud to be a Pittsburgher, and heeding the advice of our public health professionals and the guidance they're putting out so we can fight this pandemic.
So you're trying to protect all of them. You're trying to protect residents, but you're also trying to protect against further damage to our local economy?
Absolutely. I mean, look, COVID-19 has wreaked havoc on our local economy. We're particularly concerned about our small businesses, our restaurants. And if we want to look the way we did 10 months ago, when we recover in the coming months, we need to all double down right now and make sure we wear our masks, wash our hands, and follow the guidance of our public health professionals.
You put together a well-produced video featuring famous Pittsburghers, including Steeler Hall of Famer Franco Harris, a well-respected person in the community. Why do you think that people will respond to them when maybe they ignored our governor, our state health secretary, and many others?
Well, we do know that Pittsburgh certainly likes to hear from its own and people that they can relate to. And I think there's something about this COVID-19 and the rules we're putting out that it's easier in some ways to relate to someone who's just trying to live like us, somebody who wants to get back to their sports, to their restaurants, to see their families.
In a press release from the Allegheny Conference, it said the campaign was funded in part with, quote, generous financial support from some of the biggest companies in town. Where did the idea come from? How long did it take to execute this campaign?
So to be honest, this came together over the course of probably 2 weeks, and the video was filmed over the last 5 days. And I have to say, this is really a tribute to the collaborative spirit and in some ways the pride that is Pittsburgh of people saying, we are going to do what it takes and make sure that we are getting this message to a place, to all places far and wide that it needs to get.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier you're concerned about small businesses, including restaurants, which have been really devastated by the recession and restrictions to tamp down on the pandemic. Why not use those resources instead to, say, advocate for small business relief programs or offer support to people applying for grants?
We're actually doing that too. I mean, we have a really specific effort underway in Harrisburg and in DC where we've been using the resources through our Chamber of Commerce and others to make sure that we make sure that resources come to those companies. But the fact is, the scale of the support and the relief needed is nowhere close to the scale of this campaign. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you're making any inroads, whether it's in state government or with the federal government, in your advocacy?
I'd like to say I think we are. I mean, we certainly have a lot more of alignment with our state officials. Obviously, the federal government right now is a very challenging place to be, but we do feel confident that this stimulus will provide a first phase of relief. And the next phases, whether it comes to support for our municipalities or liability protections that I know they're putting on hold, we'll continue to fight for those and hope that those will come in January.
Stephanie, you mentioned that this campaign came together rather quickly. Why now, 9 months into the pandemic? Shouldn't of our business community maybe have been doing much more earlier on, maybe in addition to lobbying Harrisburg and D.C.?
Well, I mean, we have launched probably 3 websites, had about 40 webinars, and compiled all the resources that have really been a conduit for communication and education and information throughout this pandemic. But what we realized that we were missing was a lot more of a mass communication. And the more that time goes on, we felt that it was important that we step up.
Are you concerned that people will let their guard down even more because the vaccine is available to some, but it's going to be many months before everyone has access?
Absolutely. And this is just the beginning. I mean, we've been doing consumer confidence surveying since the beginning of the pandemic. We've done about 13 of them. And what we know is that about 55% of people in the Pittsburgh region are only wearing their masks occasionally. We have to move that number. We need to get it to 80%, 90%, 100% of people complying with mask wearing.
Finally, how are people going to see this video?
There's a website called proudtoprotectpittsburgh.com. They can find the video. They can find all the details of the campaign. They can find ways to help us share the message far and wide, and we encourage them to do so.
Stephanie Pashman is the CEO of the Allegheny Conference on Community Development, which has launched the Proud to Protect Pittsburgh campaign. Stephanie, thanks so much.
Thank you, Kevin. It's wonderful to be here, and please stay healthy and safe and warm.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh's Public Works Director Mike Gable is retiring in January after serving the city for more than 45 years. He worked his way up the ranks, joining the city as a laborer in 1974, and has been with the city through 7 mayors, a recession, blizzards, and annually, potholes. Mike, thanks for being there.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to talk to you today.
So when the mayor's office announced your retirement, you said in a press release, quote, "I was given an opportunity over 45 years ago because someone saw something in me that I did not know I had." Someone gave you an opportunity. How did that change your confidence as an employee?
Well, you know, I have to give credit to that person. It was Jonah Tolley. And I remember walking in and I told him I wanted to be looking at the foreman positions. And he said, you don't want that. And what he did is steer me in the direction of the administrative levels. And so through the years, I have gone since 1980, basically have gone through a lot of administrative titles all the way up to currently what I'm doing now as a director. Mm-hmm. And on both the Parks and Rec side and the Public Works side.
You've been Public Works Director since 2014. When you came into that role, what did you see as your top priority?
We've improved the snow and ice control program. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I came in 14, so we were scraping up salt to try to get the streets cleared and I just didn't want to go into the next season for snow and ice operations without having a surplus of salt. And we solved that problem by putting working with the county on a salt dome over in Blawnox that was empty, and we filled it with salt, both of us. And so we have surplus salt should we ever run low, and we've never run low in the 7 years I've been here now. Mm-hmm. And more recently, we've now created a litter sensor crew that goes around and empties the litter receptacles basically overnight. And that was a job that was done by 25 employees in the past, and now we're doing it with six.
Public works involves, you know, physical activity to improve, to repair our infrastructure. But in your years, how has technology impacted the work?
Oh, technology has solved our, you know, a lot of our problems. I mean, going back to litter crews, I mean, we used to go, the crews in five divisions would ride around and look at the cans to see if it was really full or needed to be emptied. Now we can do it in a matter of hours. Obviously, it's done by just a few people. The technology, the fact that we have censored cans, that information is being relayed to tell us exactly what cans are being used, how filled they are. We have technology in snow and ice control. I think you're familiar with Snow Tracker, Snowplow Tracker.
Oh, yeah.
Now our drivers, in years past, we still have paper routes, but they now have tablets in the trucks. Just like you use a GPS to go from point A to point B, they're going to have the same thing. They're going to pick a route, and that tablet is going to give them turn-by-turn directions.
So what accomplishment are you most proud of through the years, whether it was with parks or public works?
Wow. I'll tell you, the Trust for Public Land does a survey to gauge how well parks are doing across the country. We were around 80th in the country out of 100 cities. I left to go to the county for a very short stint there and came back to the city in 2014 as the director, and working with my staff in addition to some director of Parks and Rec and his staff, and we have risen through the years to last year, we were 15th in the country out of 100 cities. So it doesn't speak to the quality. That could be a whole different parameter. But I'm really proud that we've risen that far up. I think our parks are great spaces. I think that's been proven in this challenging time with COVID.
Finally, Mike, are you going to miss those off hours, those middle of the night, those weekend calls that start with, Mike, we've got a problem?
You know, honestly, I that stuff never really bothered me. I am going to miss this job. I love this job. I love doing what I'm doing right now. There, I will tell you this. I love public works, and I do love the winter. But you have to come to work for public works to really have sort of a, I don't want to see any snow. I don't want to see any ice. I'm not saying I was a skier or anything, but I did like the snow and I like the sled ride and do those things, but I can't wait for spring to get here. That's all I can say.
Mike Gable retires in January after 45 years with the city of Pittsburgh, including the last six as director of public works. Thanks and good luck, Mike.
Thank you very much. It was very nice talking to you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.